What's going on, guys? Thanks for tuning into the Local Crown Podcast, where we're going to teach you how to wage war on your competition and earn your local crown, also known as the top spot on Google. Today, I'm coming at you with my man, Nick Peterson. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and why you do it for the people who don't know you, my man?
Yeah, man, absolutely. It's funny because people, if you ask what I do, I always say it depends on who you ask. Or I say I collect smart people. But my background is primarily cognitive behavior therapy, which is what I do is help people modify their behavior to get closer to what they actually want, which is interesting because most people don't know what they want. And then if they think they know what they want, turns out it's not what they really want, right? So I partner with and I have clients that are world-class at what they do. Some of them have been on your show, like Dan Nicholson, for example. And they have intellectual property or methods or operating systems that can really change people's lives. The issue is getting them to articulate it to other people. A lot of times, like Dan is a great example, they're so smart that regular people have a hard time kind of understanding the advice or the operating system. So most of what I do is learn from these people. It's cool because they pay me. And I learn from them and then help them figure out how do we craft this intellectual property in a way that people can understand, so it's palatable. And how do we build programs so that they actually implement these things and modify their behavior in a way that's beneficial to them? So multiple different industries. Worked with John Hopkins, the head of endocrinology, John Hopkins, Florida Department of Health. Obviously, Dan Nicholson, his accounting firm. The first time I did this, my first business was with a PhD in metabolic chemistry. So I surround myself with really smart people. I try to learn what they are trying to help other people learn and then bridge the gap.
Awesome, man. So I tend to attract a lot of these people that are just hyper intelligent and just have a habit of either just going over people's heads, not explaining it in the right way, or just straight up just train wrecking them with information. And then the people don't even know how to respond. So what is usually like the first thing that you do with these people so that they can get more clear on their message and how they explain their stuff to people?
Yeah, I'll be transparent. Totally selfish. I can only work with people if it benefits me. Meaning, I'm a doer. I'm better at doing than knowing, which means I have to learn from them and implement it in my own life. So obviously I'm not going to implement stuff that's not beneficial to me. So like say, hey, look, I really want to figure out this finance thing. So connected with Dan Nicholson. So the first thing I have to do is implement it and keep a tight feedback loop and just ask a bunch of questions, right? And then on the other end, I keep a really tight contact with mass market. So I have a whole bunch of clients and programs and stuff. And the whole time I'm looking for this one thing, and that is a gap. And the gap is between innovation and information, meaning I could say something to you. I could be like, hey, fill out this avatar sheet for me. Right. And you know what that means. So it's information to you. But if I walked into like a random Burger King and I was like, hey, everybody here, fill out this avatar sheet, they wouldn't know what it means. It actually increased uncertainty. So it's innovation. So the thing is, we say one thing to the people around us and it's information. And then we go to people that are not like us and we think we're giving them information, but we're not. We're actually increasing uncertainty. A lot of these people say, look how helpful I'm being by giving this information out. But the truth is, it's not super helpful. It's actually causing more confusion. So what I'm looking at is like, okay, super high intellect person says this. I'm going to bring it to the mass audience and I'm looking, is this information to them or is it innovation to them? And if it's information, great. It could stay as it is. If it's innovation, we got to figure out how to reinvent it so that it's information to them, right? Can we use pre-wired ideas, parables, stories, metaphors, right? And that's the process. We just go, okay, Dan said this, I get it. I turn around, I say it to other people, they don't get it. What can I do to help them understand it like I understand it? And whereas high intellect people often have been rewarded and get some validation for being right, right? Like technically correct, especially doctors, anybody with a doctorate, like they, the academic system, their job is to be technically correct. I have the freedom of not having to be technically correct. So I can say something that may not be technically correct, but it helps the person understand how to modify their behavior. Right. And so that's the game. It's just kind of vacillating between change agent, high intellect people. And just to clarify, you could be, you could be extremely intelligent in one area and not so much in another. Right. So it's not like there's that dimension as well. It's not just smart people versus dumb people. It's just that this person understands this thing so well, they can't communicate it to an average person in this domain. So how can we bridge that gap? That's all I do.
Absolutely, man. And I like how you point out that these hyper-intelligent people, there's usually a balance to it. And I've had this conversation a few times with people, and I always like to use Sheldon Cooper as the example. Like, he's hyper-intelligent, but he needs the support of the people around him in order to communicate with people, get his point across, and really get where he needs to be, just because of that lack of communication, because he is that hyper-intelligence level.
Yeah, that's it's a very common, issue. I call it the base knowledge disconnect. And this happens again, it's not smart people versus dumb people. It's individual specific domains. But even when marketers, right? Like, I assume most listeners understand the concept of an avatar in marketing. But if you go to sit at the dinner table with your family and ask, like, can you guess who my avatar is? Right? Like, it's a thing that we think is so simple, fundamental based knowledge, and it's just not. And so there's this huge disconnect in our language when we talk to people that don't do what we do.
100%. You got to make sure that you're reading out who you're talking to and communicating and using their words. And honestly, that was one of the things that I learned in sales, is when you keep it simple, you communicate it in a way that they understand, and you focus on their needs, their wants, and ultimately what they understand, they're a lot more likely to say yes, because the confused brain always says no.
Yep.
Awesome, man. So you talked about how you help people, you help people get clear on what they want and then change the behavior accordingly. So I have kind of a two-part question to this. What are the steps that you usually go through with helping people figure out what they want and then setting some goals in accordance to that?
Yeah, the first is really zooming out. So speaking to business owners specifically, but it's true for everybody. Is you get a lot of people to say, I want seven figures. I want a seven-figure business. I want an eight-figure business. I want to have an impact. And the reality is none of those are like solvable problems, right? And it's not really what we want. And this is, you probably have a ton of background in sales, right? Like what does that represent to you? So it really is like, what do you want your life to look like? I just keep circling back. What do you want your life to look like? What do you want your life to look like? What do you want your life to look like? Because if we can't get, and I'll tell you what a lot of business owners do, and people in general, they don't define success. And that's what we're really trying to do, is like, what is your ideal life look like? And they say, I have a seven-figure business. Like, no, that's not what your life looks like, right? But the reason they don't get granular, say, you know, in a perfect world, I would sleep in until 7 or 8. I'd wake up whenever I want. My wife would never have to work again, and I'd be home every day for dinner as long as till my kids are through high school. Like something like that granular. And people don't define it, because when you define success, you effectively also define failure. Right. So as long as your wife is not retired, as long as you're not home by 5 p.m., and as long as your alarm's going off at 5 a.m., you're a failure. And so we start hiding behind, yeah, but look at my car, look what kind of cars I have, look how many employees I have, look at my Stripe screenshot. And so the first process is really getting clear on what do you want your life to look like? And that takes a long, it seems super simple. It takes a really long time for people to reason through that. So that's step one. It really is. And then step two is being hyper aware of business decisions and where you put your time and money. And what I mean by that is you might say, look, my number one, what I really want is 10 more hours a week to spend with my family, right? We have to have checkpoints. Daily is probably too often, maybe weekly, monthly, depending on what it is. Because we might say, hey, look, you got 3 hours back. And instead of spending with your family, you filled it with more work. So is that really your priority? It sometimes takes months to figure out, for people to figure out what they actually want. Because we're just so inundated with like Facebook and Instagram and now Clubhouse and all that crap. So it is identify, get clear on what you think you want, right? And then have feedback loops. So, hey, you said you wanted more free time, but when you had an opportunity to get more free time, you filled it up with more work. So what do you really want? You said you wanted to pay off your mortgage, and that'd be a huge weight off your shoulder. But when you made a bunch of extra money, you went on vacation instead, right? It's really tough for people. Most people avoid this, but that's without that, it's my job and Dan's job and, you know, your job, I'm sure, to solve people's problems. But if they're not being honest about the variables, right, it's a multivariable equation, then it's just not a solvable problem. And so that's where it starts for me.
Absolutely, man. And you're right. And most people really have a hard time stepping back and looking at themselves like that. Like, I'm actually kind of curious. I know you've talked to a lot of high-level people and you've done this with a lot of people. What do you think it is that makes people so scared to step back and look at themselves?
Oh, so many things. So many things. The first is there's some level of, look, you don't get to a high level if you're not a little messed up, you know, came up through poverty, have been abused, have severe depression. Like the highest, I've never met a high level person that hasn't been through like one of four traumatic events. Right. Yeah. And so on the other end of that, there's just a lot to prove. There's a lot to prove to yourself. There's a lot to prove to other people. And if you're busy proving stuff to, you know, the teacher that failed you or your mom or your dad or your 8-year-old self, if you step out and say, hey, what do I actually really want now that I'm a full grown adult and can make good decisions? You have to let go of that identity. And in my opinion, that's the thing people cling on to, is they kind of hold on to, it's like their chew toy, right? Their identity. I have met people, and this might resonate with some and some may not get it yet, but if I say it now, I'm sure years from now, they'll recognize this. I've had a number of people that fund all their priorities. They're living the life they want. Everything is great. And they feel guilty that it's so easy. And they're literally like, look, I'm happy. I'm content. I have everything I want. It's killed my drive to push harder. And they consider that a bad thing, right? Which means somewhere in their belief system, I need to punish myself and drive really hard is one of their beliefs. It's not necessarily toward a goal. It's just you reach all your goals and you're still stepping back going, man, I don't have a drive to do stuff. That's, I think the reason people won't let go is they kind of that identity of a hustler or a grinder or a deal maker. And if you actually define your goals and reach them and you're content and you're happy, then there's a conflict. On one hand, you reach all your goals. And on the other hand, you have a belief that you need to go make deals and hustle and grind. Just got to step back and reprioritize again.
Absolutely, man. So my next question comes to is like, once you figure out what it is that you want, what's going to make you happy and what it is you're working towards, changing behavior is a very complicated and really a challenging thing. So how do you go about helping people change those habits and behaviors that aren't serving them?
Yeah, that's tough. I think the first thing is we got to help people understand, again, entrepreneurs and successful people are generally incredibly disciplined. Sometimes to a fault. And so it's understanding relative change, right? Like sometimes people be like, okay, I need to change all this and I'll try to do it overnight. And it's going from zero to 100 overnight, which is, it's basically a countdown to doomsday. Can't change who you were for the last 30 years overnight. Right. So it's understanding relative change. And I have a framework. I just map it to Maslow's hierarchy, right? The five levels. And it's just identifying one thing at a time and doing enough, meaning what is the bare minimum of sales calls you have to take in order to fall into what we have defined as your ideal life. Let me step back a little bit, actually. So you define your ideal life, right? Say, Trey, what do you want? And you tell me. And in order to solve that, we have to say, okay, what do you want your life to look like? Okay. What is your current position right now? Right? Like Google Maps. Where are you? Where do you want to go? Okay. And then what is an appropriate time frame? So I would say, Trey, you want to retire your wife and have 10 homes as passive income and, you know, whatever it is that you want. Go to all the Seahawks games, season tickets to the Seahawks. What is an appropriate timeline to achieve those things? Is it 5 years, 6 years? Like, what's the worst case scenario that would still be okay? Because entrepreneurs and driven people default to more faster. I just want everything as fast as I can have it. And the only way to find out more faster is to blow yourself up. Right? Like,
yeah.
You'll just go harder and harder and harder until you blow up, and then you don't get any of the things that you want. So we have to suck it up and say, look, worst case scenario, if I achieve all this in 10 years, I would still be okay. Like, cool. Now you're here, you need to get here, and you got 10 years. We can now actually determine how hard to push and how much we can pull back. That's a clarity piece. The next piece is the certainty piece. And that's where we modify the behavior so that we know how much we have to modify behavior in order to reach these goals in 10 years. And if the behavior gets modified, we can then collapse time. We can go from 10 years to 9 years to 8 years to seven to six and so on and so forth. But the behavior modification, you have to have clarity in the timeline. That's why I kind of reverse there, because you have to have belief, right? Behavior is very belief driven. You have to have belief that I am on track. It's okay for me to go home early or take a day off, or it's okay that I have to get up at 3 a.m. because I have belief. I have seen that I'm here. I need to go here. And if I do these actions, I will get there in a timeline that's appropriate. So belief is the number one piece. The second one is that there's two things. The second one up until recently was you have to have some sort of coach or mentor or corner man or even friend that clearly understands this vision and can tell you when you're being an idiot. It's really easy to chase money or chase opportunity or chase attention. And it's very likely those things get you further away from the behavior modifications necessary to get to where you want to go. So there's that. And then obviously, and we may talk about it, Dan may have talked about it on your episode with him. There's some sort of reward system where we have to learn how to, and this is the app that we're building. We have to learn how to measure, are we getting closer to our goals? That's really, really hard because we measure revenue. We can measure profit. We can measure sales. We can measure how tired do we feel today? But if we zoom way out, it's really tough to get a handle on, is this getting me closer to what I want? Because there's so many variables. So we have to have some sort of system or some sort of checkpoints where we can say, hey, I said I wanted 10 hours a week back and I took all these big deals because I thought money would solve the problem, but I'm actually working 5 hours a week more. And we just have to have some sort of mechanism to recognize these things so that we can zoom out and kind of course correct.
Absolutely, man. So that kind of brings me to my next question, actually. So what does certainty actually mean to you? And what are things that you're implementing in your life to give you more of that?
Yes, certainty is, we get back into this. So first, we have clarity. Right. We can't have certainty over an outcome. Like there's a high level of certainty that if I type in your address and I have phone service, that if I follow Google Maps instructions, I will get there. Right. I don't have to stress the whole time. I'm not high anxiety. So one example would be if you left me a voicemail and gave me all the directions from my house to your house and I had to remember them as I'm driving, I could have a very high level of anxiety, right? Like, oh, was I supposed to take a left there or a right there? Ooh, did I miss a turn? Am I still going the right way? Like these are all anxiety inducing. Certainty is the opposite of anxiety, right? So MapQuest comes along and we have a little bit more certainty, but it's still like if one of the roads is closed, it doesn't adapt. Google Maps is a very high level of certainty. It'll adapt to traffic. If a road is closed down, it'll reroute me. So as long as I follow Google Maps, I have a high level of certainty, which means low level anxiety, right? I have certainty. I'm going to get where I'm going. And I don't have to waste a ton of cognitive load or bandwidth on it. So when I say certainty and when we use it, we're saying low anxiety, a high level of belief that we are going to get to where we are going. And part of that is the updating, right? Like the constant, like Google Maps, the more real time the information coming in and adjusting, the more certainty we have. So to have certainty, we got to know where we're at. We got to know where we're going. And we have to trust that if we follow these instructions, there's a very high probability we're going to get what we want. It goes all the way back to why we have to define what we want, right? Yeah. And we're going to get it in a timeline that is appropriate. The reason that's important, go back to Google Maps. Let's say you have a very, very important appointment, life or death, like the most important appointment ever in your life. And Google Maps says you're going to get there in 3 hours and you have to be there in 4.5. You have a high level of certainty you're going to get to where you're going in a timeline that's appropriate, right? And because of that certainty, you don't have to take additional risk. You don't have to speed. You don't have to run stop signs. You don't have to try to take shortcuts that may or may not be more dangerous, right?
Yeah.
So that's the other level of certainty is you don't have to go further faster because there's a higher risk. You have a much higher probability of taking the safest route to what you want. So that's what certainty is. It is trying to lock in what you actually want out of life in the lowest risk way possible. And for risk takers, that's okay. They just want bigger things. So there's still risk involved. Yeah. But it's how do we not blow ourselves up?
So what are some of the things that you're doing to increase certainty in your life and make sure that you're not blowing yourself up?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting because there's certain people, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, the eccentric type billionaires. They kind of have this operating system built in. That's one of the reasons people call them eccentric is they don't chase vanity metrics everybody else says they should chase, right? They know what they want and they look for the most efficient, lowest risk path forward and then they make it happen. And so working closely with Dan, I actually moved to Seattle to work closely with Dan Nicholson. I said, how can we give other people, because not everybody's born with this, right? And not everybody can do the math. So how can we build a thing that helps regular people operate like the Elon Musks of the world. And we developed the Certainty app. It's mostly, it's almost all Dan's intellectual property, but we can actually, with a little bit of setup, get clear on current position, which is basically you plug in your personal and your business bank accounts, right? And then get clear on where you want to be. Those are your profit priorities. And there's obviously they're updating. Like you might not have kids today, and 5 years from now you have 4-year-old daughters, and like it changes. So we got to account for that. And so obviously it's the system I use is keeping this, these inputs updated so that we can look up and do two things. One, we could say, actually three things. One, am I on track? Are my behaviors today getting me closer to what matters? I'm lazy. I have a dashboard, the Certainty app. I just have a dashboard that says, yes, you are. No, you're not. So we can look at, well, what the hell did I do that got me further away? Because my bank account's bigger. How am I further away? And we can start looking at our behavior. The second one is we can kind of forecast. If I do this, will it get me further away or closer? Plug it in and go, oh, okay. Well, that gets me quite a bit closer or further away and adjust accordingly. The other thing is I might do something or plan on doing something and it gets me further away from the goals that I set, right? And there's like this visceral pain because I really actually want to do this thing. I may have to go back to the mirror, right? Like you mentioned earlier how we don't always like to look at ourselves.
Yep.
And double gut check my priorities. We all work really effing hard. Everybody listening to this, I know you do. We were talking about it before we went live. Like everybody's working hard. Let's make sure we're working to what we actually want, not something that we thought sounded good. So I'm keeping that updated all the time and just being aware of like, ooh, I am so excited. I really want to do this thing, but it gets me further away from the things I say that matter. So which one is more accurate, the feeling I have now or the things I said that matter?
Wow.
That's a question, right? Because I'm not going to work as hard as I freaking work. And I know you don't want to. I'm not going to work this hard to not get to what I actually want.
100%.
But most people are.
That's crazy to think about, man. And honestly, I love that answer. And it's actually has me looking at my priorities and what I'm doing because which I already have been, but it's making me take a harder look at it and start thinking, okay, so I have all these different things that I'm trying to do. Which of them are actually serving the things that I want to prioritize moving forward in my life? Because a year ago when I had every single one of these ideas, my priorities were definitely a little bit different.
Want me to give you Dan might have told you this already because I stole it from him, but anybody listening might have the same, and I go through this too. There's a thing called the investor frame. Did Dan talk about that with you?
I think he did, but I don't know if it was on the interview or not.
All right. So the question is, and for all listeners, and I'll make it nice and quick. The fastest way to get to what you actually want is to stop violating your own economic and personal principles, right? Like the fastest way forward is to not go backwards. So you look at all the things going on in your life, specifically business in this case, but relationships too. And you say, knowing what I know now, right? Like you might have a rental property and it's just easy to have it, right? And it's a house worth $300,000. Would I buy this house for $300,000 and rent it out to be in the situation I'm in now? If the answer is yes, great. If the answer is no, then you are violating your own personal and economic principles based on your priorities today. You look at a business, say, hey, given what I know now, would I opt in to be in the position I am in right now? If the answer is no, you are violating your own economic and personal principles, right?
Yeah.
Fastest path to like a quantum leap is to stop violating your own economic personal principles. And that's the exercise. Just say, would I choose would I opt into the position I'm in right now if everything was exactly the way it is? It is shocking how many things we will say no to, but we just stay in it because it's easy, like a bad relationship.
Wow. Yeah, that gives me a lot of reflecting to do after we're done here, for sure. So that actually, when I was looking at your website, I have a feeling that this is relevant to what we've been talking to. There was a term that stood out to me that I'd never heard before. And you mentioned intervention efficiency on your website. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is and why that's something that you talk about so much?
Yeah. The it's in my book. The intention intervention gap is just being aware of there's a gap, right? And I use the same frameworks for a lot of things. So it's interchangeable, but at the simplest level, it's the gap between all the things you say you're going to do and all the things you do. It could also be interpreted as all the things that you plan to do and all the things you actually do, all the things you think you're doing versus all the things you do, right? Those are all intention intervention gap. All the things you know you're supposed to do or think you're supposed to do and what you're actually doing. All of those are a version of the intention intervention gap. So somebody might think that they eat clean, you know, they eat appropriately 90% of the time. And in reality, it's like 45%. That's the gap. It's really important because as coaches, entrepreneurs, and so on and so forth, the problem is, like, I'll use nutrition as an example. People get a new plan, right? New exercise and nutrition plan. And they're like, I'm going to do this. And they do it like 45% of the way that it's planned out. And they go, this doesn't work. So they get another one or they change it. And again, their behavior doesn't match the plan. So they're cycling through all these plans or all these ideas or all these strategies, right? And they're trying to gauge the efficacy of each one. And the reality is they can't gauge the efficacy because their behavior isn't actually matching the plan. So we have to be aware of that gap. Same with learning. I'm a student, but let's say you know you are 100% certain you need to be doing something, right? You need to be taking 3 calls a day. You're a salesperson, you need to be taking 3 calls a day, but you're not. There's not much sense in learning more things you need to do, right? Because it just widens the gap. Until you can actually do the things that you know you're supposed to. So a lot of times learning, when people read and they binge on courses and they listen to podcasts, they're actually widening the gap. They're learning more and more things they know they need to do, but they're not changing their behavior. And what happens is that gap gets so massive, it becomes paralyzing. Because now there's 43 million things you know you need to do and you can't even do like the one thing consistently. Wow. So that's the gap. It's just, learning more stuff doesn't help you unless your behavior is changing as you learn. If your behavior does not match your plan, right, then stop changing plans. Fix your behavior until it matches the plan, and then we can gauge whether we can figure out whether it's a good plan or not. But we don't know because the results that you're getting are not the results of this plan. They're the results of your behavior. And that's where people fall off. They just swap out plans and never change their behavior. So they're really just doing, in real life, they're doing the same plan over and over and over again. So that's the gap they want to be.
And that's literally the definition of insanity, if they're just doing the same thing and not actually changing to what's going to benefit them.
Yep. The problem is they're not aware of the gap. So they think, like, we really do believe. How many times as a coach or a partner or a consultant have you heard somebody, well, I tried that and it didn't work, right? Well, they did.
Awesome.
Yeah. And if you watch the behavior, you say, well, you didn't try it. You tried like 20% of it. So it's your behavior that is not producing the results you want, not the plan. Maybe the plan sucks, but until your behavior matches the plan, we can't make that claim.
You're literally just reiterating, like, we already preach this, but your business, your life, like everything that you want, it revolves around you and the things that you are doing every single day to get those things. It's not the big things you're doing right now. It's not the massive moves. It's the little consistent things, the behaviors that serve you that lead up to the actual successes.
Yep.
So
I've just worked. I tell people all the time, even talking to you now, right? I don't tell people. I get paid a lot of money to do this. And it was weird at first because I don't tell people anything they don't already know. I've just worked really hard in helping them go, oh, now I know what to do with it. Or now I know how to tell my clients what to do with it. So that's circling all the way back to what I do. It's I've worked very, very hard on helping people realize kind of what we already know to be true and how we can modify our behavior accordingly.
Man, that's honestly just insanely valuable. And I'm going to have to go back and take a lot more notes from this episode and implement a lot of this stuff. But you've been referred to as a connector of the world's top people and a collector of minds. So I would love to know, like, your networking strategies, what you do to grow your network, and ultimately, if there's somebody you want to get to, how do you go about getting to that person?
Oh, great question. I was talking to somebody this morning. It's different for everybody. So I don't have like a dream 100 strategy necessarily, but I have found that the top people on the planet, the top minds on the planet. Okay. So I'm probably going to skip a level because a lot of times people want to connect with influencers, right? And influencers and famous people that are trying to be influencers and trying to be famous have a very unique personality and disposition. I don't jive well with them, but behind them, so diffusion of innovations, and I don't need to get into it, but it goes change agent, which is like scientist, right? Innovator of sorts. And then on the next level is a thought leader. Those are the people that most people want to connect with, you know, the Tim Ferrisses and all that stuff. And then there's mass market. So the mass market is usually looking up to the thought leader, but the thought leaders, which is who I'm assuming you're talking to really when people, anytime somebody goes, oh, I really want to meet so-and-so, it's a thought leader of sorts. It's somebody that is famous. But behind them, they typically get their information because thought leaders bring us stuff that's like, wow, Tim Ferriss is so well-connected, right? There's typically people behind them that don't want credit, that don't know how to be famous and don't do well with mass market, but they're incredibly intelligent and they're the source of information. Just so happens that those are the people that, like, you know, I think you and I jive the best with. So if you go to this kind of person, they're technically a change agent, but they're just, they super high level intellect, probably socially awkward, and you can connect with them, then it opens all the other doors because they're behind all the big names. Mm-hmm. And the way you connect with them, or the way I connect with them, is they typically don't have a ton of money either, so I don't try to sell them stuff. It's just curiosity because they are fascinating and they're kind of socially awkward, so they don't have a lot of people to talk to necessarily. And I have a handful of those people that I just connect with at a very high level. And I'm just hopelessly curious and like what they do and how they got there and how they think about this thing and that thing. And they're always happy to share. And then when it's like, I'm doing a Clubhouse room later today. And all I have to do is reach out to one of those people and say, hey, you want to bring in, let's see, we got Dave Asprey, Jim Quick, Chris Voss, Giovanni, you know, he goes, yeah, sure. I let him know they'll be there. So that's my method. I go for the people behind the people. Who's their marketing team and all that, who's their PR team, but but who is the information resource? Because they keep coming, right? They're generally speaking, they're like, they always seem to be a little bit ahead of the curve and a little bit innovative, but they're not engineers. They're not scientists. So where's this innovation really coming from? Those are the people I connect with, is the engineers and the scientists and the doctors behind the scenes, which opens up the doors to all of the people they influence.
Beautiful, man. So before we got on this interview, and kind of throughout this interview, you've hinted at it, but you mentioned that you're a part of 6 different companies on top of doing the coaching stuff. So can you give us like a 1,000-foot view of like just what all you actually do, man?
Yeah. So I have private clients, and they're typically some of the best in the world at what they do, right? And I sit in a space where they don't, again, they're the change agents, they're the engineers, the doctors, the socially awkward but incredibly intelligent humans. And they come in as clients because I get them. They've tried everything else, and I can help them kind of walk their stuff through the diffusion curve, which it has to go through, like reinvention, or they got to change their language and all that stuff. Oftentimes, not oftentimes, but I think I have 42 right now. Some of them want a higher level of support, or they want to do something together, or they want to really tap into the audience, or part of my team. And it just becomes like an equity partnership. So the coaching and having multiple businesses are very, very similar. The structure is different, and allocate resources differently. But that just, my first company was, I built 3 and I exited all 3, and I was overwhelmed, but I had a lot of money. And I thought, look, I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep like building stuff and then either burning it down or selling it. So how can I be strategic here? Or I just need to accept that that's how it's going to go. So we built Mastery Mode. I partnered with Dan G. I don't know how to say his last name because it's complicated. And what happened is, because he helped me clean up my other company before I sold it. And we kind of got together and said, hey, look, you can do systems, operations, manage teams, admins, project management, all that stuff. So we built Mastery Mode. I didn't own any companies for about a year. Sold it all. I just wanted out. I sold all my properties. I just wanted to like nap for a year. When I came back, I said, okay, I'm going to try this again. I know myself. I'm going to ready, fire, aim. I'm going to learn some stuff. It's going to be cool. And then I'm just not going to want to manage it all. So we built Mastery Mode specifically to have the resources to manage all the random crap that I do. And so that's the primary company right now. And from there, launch a private client group. And from there, with clients that want to partner, we just spin out a new entity. I don't want like, you know, if you came to me and said, hey, you want to partner? Like, I don't want anything you've already built. That's not interesting to me. So we just spun out, you know, for example, Dan Nicholson has his accounting firm. He has a phenomenal accounting firm, and I don't want a piece of that. That's like, I didn't do that. So we spun out Certainty U, which is all the intellectual property and strategies and stuff. So it's his intellectual property plus my intellectual property. It's stuff I'm teaching in my current company, and it's stuff he's implementing in his accounting firm. So it's not a whole bunch of extra work. We just repackage it differently into a separate entity. That's where they all come from.
Beautiful. So I had a part 2 to that question, but you went ahead and took care of it. Because my main reason for asking that question was how you keep it all organized. But you keep it all organized because your main company oversees and manages most of it.
Yeah, here's the trick. It's really hard for entrepreneurs. I don't do anything new. I just do whatever I do, and people do whatever they do. And when an opportunity arises, sometimes we just pull these things we're already doing together, structure it, package it, name it. But nobody's behavior really has to change, because that's the hard part, going back to the first part of our conversation.
Yeah.
So I don't, we build companies without having to modify like behavior all the way around. It's just, you know, I'm already doing this once a week and you have this sitting around for your team and we can just package this up and sell it like this. Cool. Spin out a separate entity to protect everybody, put some new colors and branding on it. And that's a new company.
Beautiful. It's kind of crazy that we're talking about this, because over the last 3 years, I was all over the place. I did marketing agencies. Like I did all that. And then towards the end of 2020 and moving into this year, we're focused on structuring things almost the same, man. So that's kind of fascinating. And you're kind of, honestly, you came on and reiterated, not only did you drop bombs for us, but you kind of reiterated that we're moving in the right direction. So I just want to say that I appreciate that.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I'll tell you, if you're going to survive, here's the weird thing about my value. If you're going to survive, which I believe you will, right? Because you've clearly done well. If you're going to survive a business, this is all stuff you're going to figure out anyway. That's like people say, and I'm younger than people expect. Like, how do you possibly, like, how could you see this coming? Or how do you know this? And it's really just studying successful people. Anybody that makes it goes through all this stuff. I just hope to save somebody 10 years and, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in effing it up first.
Beautiful, man. So how old are you?
31, just turned 31.
31. And when was your first exit?
I was 25.
So you had your first exit at 25.
Yeah, I just sold, to be transparent and clear. I had a gym in Vero Beach, Florida. It did very, very well. There's the videos on YouTube are still like everybody's favorite. It did a hair under $1 million a year. It was like, had I known how close we were, I would have made a few extra sales just to say we did $1 million, but I wasn't even paying attention. And from there I spun off a nutrition company completely separate with a different partner. And in both cases, I ended up selling my half to my partner. So it was a pretty clean both times. Same with the third one. The third one is it's $100 million company now.
Beautiful. But like the main thing that I'm seeing here is you built damn near $1 million a year company at just 25 years old.
Super interesting. Never paid for traffic. I'll give you this as a warning for anybody listening. I had never paid for traffic. I didn't know anything about sales. It was local. It was affluent people. I attracted my kind of people, high intellect, affluent, successful. Built the whole thing around that. And I thought one of my pain points was I'm playing small because I see all this stuff on the internet, right? So I sold both. I said, I'm going to get in these high ticket pay. I'm going to learn how to pay for traffic. I've never done that before. I don't know how to sell shit. I'm going to learn that. And it was like 10 steps backwards. Like I'd spent probably 6 or 8 months just completely lost. Cause I could just show up and build a 7-figure company. Like Dan Nicholson, I use him as an example too. His firm went well over 7 figures, never paying for traffic. And there's fundamental skills that you learn when you don't know how to pay for traffic. And I'm only sharing that for anybody that thinks that it's, you know, like a high ticket webinar or something is the holy grail. It's not. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. But yeah, I took it for granted. And I said, you know, look at all these people online making hundreds of millions of dollars. What am I doing playing small in this stupid little, that was my thought at the time. Like I'm in this stupid little gym. If I had I known what I know now, I would have been more strategic and I would have held on to it and I'd still be making a nice paycheck from both those companies.
Wow. Well, man, I know we've both got stuff that we got to get to, so we're going to have to do a part two, because we could sit here and talk for hours. I ask you questions for literally hours if we had that kind of time. But what is the best way for people to see more of you and get involved with you if they want to learn more from you? Because obviously we just scratched the surface.
Yeah, fastest path, two things. If you go to Nick Peterson, it's N-I-C, Nick Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N. I send a daily email. So you go to nickpeterson.com, drop in the email. And the very first thing you see is there's an invite to a free. It's like 12 videos and they're like 90 minutes each. So it's a lot. But it's the whole operating system, basically how I make decisions. A lot of stuff from a lot of my mentors and coaches and partners in there. And then the tool that we spoke about Certainty is called the Certainty app. You can go to certaintyapp.com. It went live officially, I think, this morning. So if you're hearing this, it's probably live.
Beautiful. This interview is actually going to be live first thing in the morning.
Fantastic.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And we're going to have to get a part two scheduled, because we could go on for hours.
Absolutely.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you learned something. If you have questions, email us at info@thelocalcrown.com. And if you want to get featured in our publication, Inside the Empire, alongside John Lee Dumas, the Entrepreneur on Fire, Jason Waller, the CEO of Power Home Solar, Sharon Lecter, Dan Caldwell, the man that started Tap Out, and the limitless man himself, Jim Quick, for free, then head over to thelocalcrown.com/become a contributor.